Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, three quick follow-ups from the Aaron Hernandez documentary rundown that Seth and I just did from the text page. We're getting a ton of texts on this. A lot of people could do a three-hour podcast on this. I just want to rapid-fire these reactions since we're still kind of in the moment here. The point, this is a good one. The part of the documentary where they made it seem that if weed were legal, that none of this would have happened to Aaron Hernandez.
That's right, because he never would have met the drug dealer that was the bad influence.
He would just been going to a store and buying his weed.
I know, it was really weird.
I feel like he would have murdered the cashier at the convenience store.
Wasn't it a cop that said that, too? It was either a cop or a lawyer. That was a little weird. Thank you for pointing it out.
Was it Baez who said that?
Maybe it was the lawyer. Maybe that made sense.
Yeah. Maybe. It was contended by somebody during the
It probably was Baez, the second attorney, who was very much better than the first attorney, who would find like a little angle like that. I'm like, really, he's the victim here.
Right.
Victim of our
archaic weed laws.
Yeah.
We're getting a lot of texts about his high school quarterback teammate and his dad.
Well, yeah, and that was the most salacious part of the documentary. And that's for something that's getting some criticism for. I honestly think unwarranted because, look, they bring up Aaron Hernandez's sexuality where he was bisexual or perhaps homosexual, disguising himself as a heterosexual, all this. But it was something that he was deeply conflicted about. And one of the reasons that he always tried to really show himself as a tough guy was because he felt ashamed of himself. His father was incredibly strict and old school homophobic like that. I think some people are saying that the documentary is trying to make it look like being gay turned him into a murderer or something. I don't think that's the case at all. If anything, it's a case that, look, it's a demonstration of just how awful it can make people feel that society doesn't approve of them and how the lengths they'll go to try to disguise it. But it was, on a strictly, if you take society out of it, just on a strictly soap opera side of things, you had the high school quarterback and the star tight end in an on-again, off-again relationship all throughout high school. And then whatever, there was a whole lot of stuff going on here.
Yeah. I'm going to say this. I like the father of the quarterback.
The father of the quarterback.
Now, the quarterback is now in his 30s, Aaron Hernandez. They were teammates, but I think the quarterback in the last year or so has come out. He said,
he obviously is now.
Right. But it's been very recent. And the father, I just like the father. He was really, he was an admitted homophobic person he's an older guy who would say,
in an ideal world, I would have told you that I wanted both my sons to be straight. Yeah. But you know what? I love them no matter what.
Yeah, I liked him. I just want him to be happy. Yeah.
And he spoke really demonstratively. It was really cool.
He looked like Sal Bompensero from The Sopranos. He kind of had big bug eyes and kind of a boar's head, and he was a big, happy, jolly guy. The other thing was people asking, what did we think of Chris Borland being part of the documentary?
Well, Chris Borland is in there.
Former 49ers linebacker who retired like 1 or 2 years into the league because of concussions.
Well, and it was weird because obviously at the end they find out that Aaron Hernandez had advanced CTE. And that could give, but that's again, that's another whole 4-hour podcast where you're going to do, okay, lots of people have had CTE. Aaron Hernandez is the only one who murdered somebody. So, I don't think that they're necessarily excusing the behavior or anything. They're just pointing it out as part of the picture.
Yeah.
It's not trying to say that, hey, CTE is going to turn everybody into murderers or you should excuse people for murdering. But it paints part of the picture. But Chris Borland is in there throughout, and you don't understand necessarily why until they get to the CTE part at the end. Chris Borland is the football player who retired after his very promising second season with 49ers. Frankly, what I'm going to say about Chris Borland, I think he shaves his head by choice, and it bothers me.
Bothers you? How do you think I feel?
You shave your head out of necessity.
Right, because I'd look like an idiot with a big bald patch on top of my head.
Yeah. Borland was...
No offense to anybody who chooses to not shave their head and is bald.
It annoyed me to have Borland in there, too, because they had a few people in there that were talking about the culture of the NFL and everything, to where I don't think that they necessarily should have. There are a lot of these kind of role players or guys who only spent a year or two in the NFL telling me all about what it's like in the NFL.
Portland's talking like he played till he was 40.
Yeah, like, all right, I got it, buddy. Fine.
Yeah. So back to Houston sports, as we've talked about throughout the show today, all three teams dealing with their own issues right now, but still three teams that are within the specter of their own sport, still considered, I think, good teams. Even though the Rockets are in a bad stretch right now, I think if we looked at an odds board, the Rockets are probably one of the five or six top teams to win the NBA title. I know it sounds crazy to say that one day removed from them blowing a 15-point lead at home, their fourth straight loss. Trust me, if there are NBA odds that come out this week, I will see them, and I guarantee you the Rockets are in the top six teams to win the championship. Similarly, the Texans had a horrible ouster in the playoffs. Still a playoff team. Things to fix. They're trying to do that. And the Astros are a championship-level team that's dealing with an unprecedented cheating scandal, sign-stealing, that we've, you know, the likes of which we'd never seen before, until the Red Sox get punished for their cheating scandal. Seth, of the three teams that are going through their different messes right now, which team do you trust the most to pull out of their self-inflicted nosedives?
Let's see.
Astros,
well,
Rockets,
I guess the Astros. I don't even feel like the Astros are in a nosedive, so I object to the characterization of such. They're in a bit of a pickle. They have to find a manager. The biggest thing they can do right now, and the most important thing they need to do, is find a manager who doesn't screw things up. There is a whole lot about baseball where it's just like, all right, don't make the wrong decisions. I would say Dusty Baker has kind of a pretty extensive track history of some. Curious,
head scratchers.
Not pulling pitchers early enough. Some of the decisions that he's made, he might fall into the category of not 100% and totally buying into the analytics. But there are certain things I like about it. Just don't screw this up. Whoever it ends up being, maybe it's Dusty Baker and it ends up being the right move. Maybe it's Showalter. Maybe it's Gibbons. Whatever. Bannister would be awesome. I feel like Bannister might be your best shot of getting both. Hey, a guy that checks the personality box and also is going to go along with what the front office wants to do. Mm-hmm. So, okay, it's the Astros. And then again, with the Texans, are they in a – why would you characterize it as a nosedive?
Maybe I'm overstating it.
Okay.
Yeah, I knows that, but I think they're all three dealing with some degree of turmoil.
Right.
Is turmoil a better word?
Turmoil's
they're
a good
word.
They're
all dealing with turmoil.
Yeah, I think the Rockets can and definitively will pull themselves out of it. I guess it comes into what are your expectations. The Rockets, we should be talking about potential championship, and I'm not sure I will be talking about them as a potential championship winner. The Texans aren't at that level yet, so I guess I put them in third place right now. Like, yeah. I don't necessarily have as much hope for the Texans becoming a championship contender next year as I do for the Rockets this season.
Yeah, the big thing the Texans have going for them is just the sport that they play has a lot more variability built into it year to year than basketball does, and the playoffs too. The playoffs are a one-and-done kind of thing. There's a reason why the Kansas City Chiefs wound up playing against a 4 seed and a 6 seed as their path to the Super Bowl. There's a ton of variability built in when you have a one-and-done format of the playoffs. So I'm with you on the Astros are easily the one. If this were a circle of trust argument, right? You and I do that circle of trust for the various teams. If we were doing a circle of trust for the three teams, I think right now the Astros would be the one team. Ironically, the team that got caught for cheating
right. Is
the one team that I would put in the circle of trust if the criteria is compete at a championship level in their upcoming season,
well,
and especially
because the Astros, after a very thorough investigation, were found to have not been cheating, at least at the same level. Maybe they're doing like the normal MLB style cheating. They weren't doing the same things in 2019 that they were doing in 2017, and they came within one game of winning it all. They came within a few innings of winning it all in 2019. So with largely the same core back other than Cole and a couple's, they're still going to be contenders. Are they still third place in the are they still the third most favored team to win the World Series?
They're tied for second
a couple
days ago. Yeah,
yeah.
With the Dodgers.
Right, they're the runners up in favorites to win the World Series. So yeah, they're there. They haven't even left. It's just ugly on a PR side right now.
Yeah, and I think their window's probably been shortened a little bit. But for 2020, they're fine.
Oh, I literally lost my breath there when you said that. You're right. I mean, you're completely correct.
Yeah.
Astros. Who's got more? Okay. Who's got more resources to get out of whatever funk they're in right now? The Astros are the best of all three of them in terms of quality of team, and yet their pipeline is one of the worst in baseball all of a
sudden. Yeah, this is going to sound crazy. For a team that's missing its first-round pick the next 2 years, to me it's the Texans.
Oh.
Because of the nature of the sport.
Right,
one, they've got a bunch of cap space, but two, it's way easier to eject from bad deals in football, than it is in baseball and basketball.
You don't have all that guaranteed money.
That's right.
You know what the Astros have going for them, though? And this is one of the criticisms of Major League Baseball's punishment. They didn't touch their international system at all.
Yeah.
So that's where, like, the huge, when we start talking about general manager potential hires, the guy, give me the guy or woman who's absolute 100% best on the international side of things. Because that's the one area that has been, that you still have a relatively even playing field.
Text message. The thing I haven't heard anybody talk about yet is, don't the Ravens have the same problems as the Texans? How is their playoff collapse much different from ours? Okay. A, no. The Texans have way more problems than the Ravens do right now. B, how was their playoff collapse much different than the Texans? The Ravens didn't have a 24-0 lead 20 minutes into the game. The Ravens moved the football up and down the field on the Tennessee Titans and made some decisions that went the wrong way on fourth down. They were in the red zone. They kicked a bunch of field goals in that game. They're not the same at all.
Well, what I would say definitively, because it's a fair enough question, I think, is because, hey, you had a good regular season followed by an extreme disappointment in the playoffs. The difference is that the Ravens had a bona fide, awesome regular season. They put together a piece of work that was just astoundingly good, and then they were an extreme disappointment in the playoffs. But the Texans, by all, if you look at it from pretty much any different angle, the Texans were the equivalent of an 8-8 football team that got Deshaun Watson out of some potential losses. Yeah. Like they managed to squeak it out and get some of these one possession wins that vaulted them up to 10 wins. But they scored fewer points than they allowed this season. That's rarely happens that a team like that even makes the playoffs.
Right.
Whereas the Ravens have a whole lot more positive going on.
They were destroying everybody. Yeah. During
so it's a, no, season. I mean, it's a fair point to make. It's just that this also happens sometimes in sports. Really, really good teams run up against the wrong matchup in the playoffs and out they go.
Especially in football where you have one shot. It's not a best of seven.
You only get one shot.
That's it. Yeah. Payne and Pendergast, Sports Radio 610.
Oh, look. I apologize to anybody that was upset about spoilers when we were talking about the Aaron Hernandez
I think a tease beforehand, and then the fact that you can tell we're talking about it at the very beginning of the segment isn't that kind of warning enough?
Well, I would say this, too.
Am I going to be the bad guy here?
And maybe I'm out of line here. I would invite feedback. With a documentary, I feel like everything in that documentary had already been documented. It's just consolidating all of it and throwing it out in one chunk.
Yeah. There's no plot twist.
It's like if you watch the movie Titanic and I tell you that the boat sinks at the end, if I've given you a spoiler,
right.
I don't think so.
Right.
I think like there's still, if anything, with a documentary, if I hear people talk about various aspects of a documentary, I'm more likely to go watch it.
Yeah.
I'm not thinking about spoilers because I know ultimately, Aaron Hernandez hangs himself in his prison cell.
Yeah, this just in.
Spoiler alert.
This just in. Yeah. There's not this swerve at the end where it turns out Aaron Hernandez is alive.
Now, the one I would throw a wrinkle into that. I don't even want to mention the name of the movie right now. There is a very good movie that's based loosely on historical events, and the twist at the end basically is that one of the huge events never happened.
Mm.
So that would be a weird one where I've veered away from talking about that movie at all.
Okay.
But it's an awesome ending.
Yeah. Text message. Not long ago, we were talking about the golden age of Houston sports. Jeez. No, that was Seth Payne who was talking about that.
Hey, I'm not. For some reason, I said in 2015 that Houston was a franchise quarterback away from being at the beginning of a golden age of sports.
I just wanted to give you a chance to clarify.
Yeah, we came close, right? We came super close. I would define a golden age as if two of the major teams won a championship
within a certain window of time,
and where all the other teams were generally in the playoffs or competing every single year. The second part of that we've had since 2017, really.
Yeah.
Since 2017, all three teams have been in the playoffs. All teams, one team has won a championship. If for some reason, if somehow the Rockets or the Texans won a championship within the next 2 years, I would point out, I would say 2016 through 2021 as being a golden age in Houston sports. So we're not there yet. We're still potential. Now, we're in a lull right now. If you're some clown that thinks, because we're in a rough patch right now, because the Rockets have had some ugly losses, because the Astros got a slap on the wrist, because the Texans, all right, we could write a bunch of paragraphs about that. if you think that all of a sudden now we're like we're one of the dregs of society or something, you can honestly go screw yourself. We are still very much in a salvageable portion of a potential golden age of Houston sports. We just need to right the ship a little bit on a couple of things. And the Astros, by the way, are the second favorite team to win the World Series this year.
That's right.
The Astros are doing just fine, buddy.
You want me to make you feel even better about the Astros, Seth?
Yeah.
They're naming the Hall of Fame class for 2020 today. We'll get to that in just a second. But there's an article on MLB.com by Mike Petriello where he lists all of the players that are playing right now who are going to be in the who have a chance to be in the Hall of Fame someday. Mm-hmm. Okay, so these are all the players that are currently playing, and he kind of puts them into tiers, right? Like the very tippy top. Like he calls the very first tier is the Mike Trout zone. Right. Mike Trout's number one. He's in a tier by himself. He's like J.J. Watt was a couple of years ago. He could retire right now. Mike Trout's a Hall of Famer, which is crazy because he's played in like three playoff games his entire career. Then there's the next tier, the no doubt about it. And that's Albert Pujols, number two. Oh, look, and they're rating them by they put them in order in these tiers of wins above replacement.
Mm-hmm.
Number two, behind Trout, Albert Pujols. Oh, look who's number three. Justin Verlander.
Uh-huh.
I believe last I checked, he's the ace pitcher for who? The Houston Astros.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, and nobody would expect him to have been touched by this because it didn't involve pitchers, obviously.
Right. No, I'm not worried. This has nothing to do with the sign stealing. But this has to do about, with like, feeling good about the Astros.
Recognizing where you are right now.
Trying to get us out of this funk as a city where everybody's feeling bad right now.
Yeah,
and remind people,
we've
got good teams.
If you fall in times of hardship, how weak is your strength?
Yeah.
Or whatever that quote is.
So future Hall of Famers in this article, that's one. So you get through that, no doubt about it. There's five of them on that tier. Pujols, Verlander, Cabrera, Kershaw, Scherzer. You get to the next tier, the 30 and over players with strong cases. Oh, look who's first in that tier, Zach Greinke.
Mm-hmm.
He's the number two pitcher for who? Oh, the Houston Astros, that's right. Cano, Votto, Molina, Posey, Sale, Giancarlo, Goldschmidt, Freeman,
yeah,
Chapman, Kimbrel.
And this is what's gonna torment the rest of Major League Baseball all this year, and it's going to be fun to watch,
right.
Is that the Astros are still going to be really good.
Yeah.
It's going to drive people insane.
Yeah.
And I'm telling you right now, learn to embrace it. They will be absolutely livid.
Yes.
When the Astros come to your town and win a series, you're not going to be able to... The poor talk radio hosts are going to have to be turning people away at the gates because people will be so livid that the non-cheating Astros beat their team.
Embrace your inner sign stealer, people.
Yes.
Embrace your inner orange. Okay, so that's two in this article.
I'm going to go to every game. You know what I'm going to do this year? I'm going to go sit in the outfield. I'm going to travel the games and sit in the outfield with binoculars.
Let's do
like
that.
Like huge, like big-ass, like $2,000 binoculars.
We should make some road trips this summer. Next tier, 30 and under players on the right track. Oh, let's see here. Who's 1-2? Oh, look who's third down in that tier. Jose Altuve.
Mm-hmm.
Look who's a few more players down on this tier. Alex Bregman.
Right.
Hmm.
This is four players. This is what's going to really drive people insane, I don't know, 20 years from now, I suppose, is that Altuve, this is going to be a blip on the radar with Altuve. And I think there probably will be some voters who don't vote for him because of this. But I think that the big difference is going to be, for one, Altuve's stretch where it's documented that he may have cheated is going to be 2017 and part of 2018. You take that out of his stat line and he's still a Hall of Fame caliber player as long as he keeps playing a few more years. So I think for the most part, after people have some perspective and history behind this, it's going to fall into a category of an egregious example of guys pushing the limits the way they always have with cheating in baseball. And just like we fondly look on Gaylord Perry and whatnot, it's not going to be quite that. It's going to be because this involved technology and because it was a coordinated effort. But it's just not going to have the same stigma attached to it that the steroid era did, I think, when it comes to Hall of Fame voting.
I don't think so either when it comes to Hall of Fame. I think you're right about that. Let me add one more name. Guess who gets mentioned in the 2 years or less young field?
The
Astros.
2 years or less?
2 years or less.
Oh, Jordan?
Yeah.
Mentioned.
You know, not saying he's going to be a Hall of Famer, but a guy who's
how many
you know, early
DHs
on
are
has
in
put
the,
up
the Hall of Fame?
That's a good question.
He's going to have to.
Edgar Martinez just went in last year.
Yeah.
So that broke the seal. I think Big Poppy's going to go in.
Right.
He'll be largely a DH for
he's
most
gonna
of his
He's
going
to have to
career.
Be an astoundingly good DH, which he obviously has the ability to do. And he didn't benefit.
Dude.
He didn't benefit from the tub thumping.
How How psyched are you for a full year of Yordan Alvarez?
Going against
regular season pitching.
And the best thing, too, about Yordan, this is the one silver lining of going to the World Series but losing it, was that Yordan got to get himself out of that funk. Yep. Like, I was worried if they'd never gone to the World Series, I was worried about how Yordan would enter next year's postseason.
ALCS was the last thing we saw.
Right, yeah. Right. If like, oh, wow, he completely fell apart in the playoffs, and is this going to be some kind of psychological block? He got over that hump, whatever it was. Yep. So that's maybe the best thing that came of the World Series.
Do you think Yordan can hit 50 home runs this year?
Yes.
Yeah. He had 50 last year.
The over-under is on him.
My guess is it's a lot less than 50. That'd be a good one. Over-under Yordan Alvarez home runs, it's not going to be 50. No one's going to put 50 as a number out there for a guy, unless it was 1998 and it was Sammy Sosa or Mark McGwire. I would say an over-under for Yordan Alvarez. He had 27 with the big club last year, and he came up in June. I would say somewhere in the low 30s would probably be the over-under, because you got to factor in injury. You got to factor in there may be some National League ballparks he doesn't play in. That's only a handful of games. But nobody's going to put a number. I mean, if they put a number out there in the mid-40s, I'll fire on the under just based on the fact that he could have a sophomore slump. So I tell you this, Houston, you have five players listed on this future Hall of Famers article. It doesn't even include names like George Springer, who's not going to be a Hall of Famer, but who's a heart and soul guy in this team. Carlos Correa could have a big comeback year this year. Lance McCullers is finally healthy. Times are good. Times are good for the Houston Astros. Last one here, Seth. Do you think that today is the day that Barry Bonds and Roger Clemens get into the Hall of Fame?
No, they weren't on a trajectory to, were they?
They took a little uptick last year. Not as big an uptick as I think some people thought they needed.
Yeah, yeah.
59.5% for Clemens. You need 75% to get it. 59.5% for Clemens last year, 59.1% for Bonds. So they're about identical. Mm-hmm. I think they take another bump up this year. They've got three more chances to get in.
Yeah. I'm still reeling from is the Berkman being permanently removed from it. And it was almost without any like warning or fanfare or sudden, and all of a sudden that he just got let, he's completely out of the
didn't get
the
enough votes to stay on the ballot. I got to go compare the numbers. Well, like Edgar Martinez got in eventually.
The real shame about that too is that Berkman is one of the guys that's almost universally acknowledged as like, oh yeah, he definitely didn't do steroids. Right.
He was chunky.
He's like other people have said, like, oh yeah, he was like, yeah, he 100% didn't do it. Like, yeah. It's not even in the conversation.
Right. He ate Twinkies when they landed next to him in the outfield.
His reward for that is like, no, we're not even going to talk about you.
Yeah. He gets like 2% of the vote. I'm looking at the vote from last year. Lance Berkman got 1.2% of the vote. How do you operate in an ecosystem where Edgar Martinez gets in with 70-something percent of the vote, 85% of the vote? How do you operate in an ecosystem where Edgar Martinez gets 85% of the vote and Lance Berkman gets 1.2%? I'm not saying he's as good as Edgar Martinez. I'm not saying he's not, though.
Yeah.
But for it to be like for the same group of voters to go, yeah, for sure, Edgar Martinez, and then like, nah, sorry, Lance Berkman. Sorry, Michael Young deserves more votes than you do. Sorry, Lance Berkman. Like 1.2% of the vote? That's crazy to me.
In terms of my plan of going to visiting ballparks with a pair of $2,000 binoculars, other people are saying that I should also have a notepad and that I should just randomly yell out various pitches. It's like, slider! Curveball! Yes. And then John Boy will put it together, and he'll cherry pick the ones where I was actually correct.
Of course, yeah. Of course. Listen to this. All right, Seth. I said it before the break. There is a local football hero is returning to the football scene. Now, some people will be like, who did the Texans sign?
They bring in an Earl Campbell as a running back?
They're not. He is a local hero, but no, it is not. The Houston Roughnecks of the XFL have signed Charles James.
Oh, that's a good move. Oh, awesome.
I wonder, does he
that's really That's he a really good move.
I wonder, he doesn't still live here, does he? He's from Florida.
I think he went back to Florida. Yeah. He's from Jacksonville. Charles James is cool. When I met him the first time, he started reciting off all of my teammates from like 1999.
Yeah.
He grew up in Jacksonville and or near there, and he was from Madden and everything. He knew all about it, remembered different stuff. But he remembered stuff about that season too. And he would have been a young child at that point. I'm guessing what, like 9 or 10 years old or so, if that.
Yeah.
He was really, he's a true football nut.
Yes.
So like Charles James, for all of like how funny he is and how boisterous he is and everything, he's also like just a true hardcore football fan.
It was a feel-good story that you're coming out of Hard Knocks.
So, oh, that'd be good. That's a really good move for him because – or that's a good move for them. It's a good move for him, but good move for them too, because I think he brings the right kind of attention. And it's not just, hey – it's not the attention that, like, maybe bringing in a washed-up superstar from the days of old or something would. It's that, okay, this is a guy that people know, they like him already, and he's going to be really good in appearances and everything.
Do you think they'll let him carry the football? Remember that?
Yeah,
remember when they gave him the ball against the Saints in the preseason and he took it to the house?
That was one of the things that Bill O'Brien, he was one of Bill O'Brien's versatility projects. Like
smart, tough, dependable.
O'Brien falls in love with some of these guys and he's like, all right, I'm going to figure out a way to do something with this guy. Joe Webb, like all these guys. And sometimes it might be one of the more forgivable blind spots for Bill O'Brien, because I feel like I think you can empathize with that, can't you? Like, if you're a football coach, you know that you fall in love with your guys, your little mascot types.
Yeah, the underdog story.
You want to figure out a way to keep them on the team. So I actually like that about Bill O'Brien, that he does it. I think sometimes maybe he needs to use better judgment with it. But that's – in the XFL, I would imagine we will see a lot of, like, part-time two-way players.
Mm-hmm.
If you've got your best – you've got so many really good athletes on any given team – if you can use them on offense every now and then go for it. If you got awesome cornerbacks that are just simply better athletes than a lot of your other guys, then just go ahead and use it.
Do you remember what Bill O'Brien did in Hard Knocks after Charles James ran that long touchdown? I think it got called back, if I'm not mistaken, in that Saints game. But Charles James was going by the team bus, and they were kind of joking around, like smiling at each other. Bill O'Brien was in the bus looking out the window. Do you remember what Bill O'Brien did? Gave him the middle finger.
He flipped him off. That's right.
Big smile on his face.
Yeah, it was. It was like he loved it. It was like a tussle of the hair.
It was a more endearing time and place for young William O'Brien.
It was. Boy, just take that. There's another one that in transcript form that would have sounded a lot worse. That
he flipped
Charles
him
off? James walked by.
Yeah.
Bill O'Brien flipped him off. 3 weeks later, Charles James would be released.
He was. Yeah. They eventually brought him back. Remember, they kept Jamal Roll.
That's right.
Because
it was longer arms.
Yeah, yeah.
It was over height. They said, let's go with what we're going to go with. In one of those meetings that they showed with Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith, where you could tell they weren't actually having a meeting. Like, Bill O'Brien and Rick Smith, I'm guessing, would meet at a Denny's with baseball caps pulled down over their eyes to have their actual meetings. Because remember the one meeting they were showing on Hard Knocks where it was like 2 straight minutes of O'Brien and Rick Smith saying, well, yeah, hard to make these cuts. Yeah, you can't keep them all.
Sure is.
Sure is hard to make these cuts. Yeah, you know, you can't keep them all. You got that right, Bill. You know, it was weird. So they weren't, I don't think they were having their, except for that one conversation about Roll versus Charles James.
You think that was legit?
Yeah, and you saw that with Charles James, and this is where I think it's a really good sign for the Roughnecks, because James is right there on the fringe of, all right, and if teams were going to take a chance on him when he was younger because there was something they wanted to see with him, but he wasn't quite there to keep making veteran money as he got older, but he's right there on the fringe. He's probably going to be a really good player for them. I think the thing with him, what Charles James would have needed to be able to do is really be better because of his length issues. Guys that make it at that height, they get really good at anticipating.
Yeah.
Like, you got to make up that extra 6 or 7 inches somewhere, you know, and it's with anticipation or the motion of the ocean. It's a way to make up
which
lost inches
are you? Motion in the ocean. I got you. I think we did a good job in the previous segment of reminding Astro fans that they have some good things to think about. There are certain Texan fans that I'm worried about, like very specific Texan fans that I'm worried about. I think of guys like Texans Bill, Seth.
Mm-hmm.
He's a very diehard Texan fan who can get very downtrodden when the team is not doing well.
He's very excited when they do well.
Yeah.
Especially when it's one of his beloved Longhorns. But,
big swings in emotion with him.
Yeah.
So the Texan Bill, following the loss to the Chiefs, I want to play the audio that he put out there of his video after the loss to the Chiefs. And at the end, I want to try to figure out, is this somebody who we can, does he represent a group of the fan base that we can try to pull out of the muck here? And maybe not today, maybe not tomorrow, but over the course of the next month or two. Here is our good friend Texans Bill.
Texans Bill here, fresh off that fest. Let me. Some defense would have been f-ing great. We can't generate a pass rush for shit. I don't. We can't. Kels, you know he's going to get the ball. Can't cover him. I mean, I guess we shut down Hill for the most part. I guess. But I'll see Kels standing around down there near the goal line. And then there's a bunch of Texans around him. Like, oh, wonder if they're going to throw him the ball. Oh, well, they did. I mean, it's just hard to watch this ketchup on his steak motherfucker sitting there just shred. You give him the ball back after you score. Hey, they get the ball to 20, 25, 15, don't matter. One play, they're across the damn 50. Pitiful defense. Mahomes running around like a Lamar Jackson and in the I ain't got a problem with the fake punt, whatever. You got something you're looking for. They thought they sanked it. They went. I don't care. I'd have loved it. If they'd have got it, we'd be all that. Brian, hey, O'Brien pulling out his Well, you know what O'Brien needs to do? He pulls his head out his ass. His quarterback has to come with like 11 minutes left or whatever it was, come up and tell him, O'Brien, it's a four down territory. We're trying to come back. Why are you sending anger management out here? Okay, Deshaun, I'll call a timeout. We'll go for you. Get your way. Whatever. God. Dumb, dude. And is Deshaun some type of idiot or something to where you got to make him huddle? You got to make sure that he got 25 seconds, diagnose the defense, what they're set up as. There's no urgency. Snap the fucking ball, man. Jesus Christ. But, of course, I watched the whole damn thing. It's like watching your ex-wife's husband sniff his to a quarters, but no, what else can you do?
Wait, what? I hadn't heard that the first time.
I remember that midway through this. I'm like, geez, I hope Jonesy.
I can't even fill in the blanks on that
yeah,
one.
Yeah, yeah, no, it was graphic.
It was Travis Kells.
I'm going to tell you right now, it's really funny audio. It stresses me out because we're on radio and all the beeps. The last time I felt like this, have you seen Uncut Gems yet?
No.
The Adam Sandler movie?
No.
It's the most stressful 2 hours that you're ever going to spend.
Oh, you're stressed the whole time?
The whole time.
It's like, it's like watching Ozark.
Because
that's the same thing with Ozark. You watch that, you're stressed for Marty the whole time.
It's so stressful.
Are you stressed for Adam Sandler?
Yes.
Is that the character? So yes. You're okay. So that's not a spoiler, everybody that's getting angry at us about spoilers.
And others in there. Yeah. Like, it's just, so there's it's a lot of bad sad. People in
these
the movie.
Crime, and I'm trying to remember, honestly, I'd like to do a survey. I don't know if it's because the movies have gotten better or it's just this is what happens when you get older. I don't ever remember as a young man being this stressed out by crime movies and TV shows. Now, all I do, I watch anything where somebody's committing crimes and they're under, like, they're constantly running. I'm stressed the whole time.
You know why? The cinematography's better.
You feel like you're right between there. The music and the cinematography and everything.
And the way they do it in Uncut Gems, it's a little like The Office. You're watching The Office right now, right? It's not like it's being shot in a studio. It's like it's being shot by a bunch of hand cameras.
It feels like surveillance almost, though, too.
Surveillance, yeah. And it's, you're sort of the cameras moving around.
Oh, so just keeping
like
you on edge all the time?
Yes.
But I think isn't part of it just that as you get older, you just start to be more cautious, too?
Maybe.
Like you're not, the younger side of you is like, hell yeah, I'll sell some meth.
I just know I liked Uncut Gems, and I will never go see it again, even though I know what happens.
Is it about, loosely, is he a jewel thief or something?
No, he's a jeweler. He owns a jewelry store, but he's a degenerate gambler.
Oh, so he gets into gambling trouble somehow.
It's crazy. It's crazy. It's very, very good. It's very specific. I could see where people would go see it. I could see where certain people would go see it and they'd walk out in the middle because they don't find the subject matter to be interesting.
Yeah.
I, on the other hand, find the underground world of gambling and jewelry and things like that to be fascinating. So I stayed for the whole time.
You know what's funny?
It took years off my life.
Somebody says, I think it's sad that nationally they think we all sound like this Texans Bill dude. I don't think, well, there might be some truth to this. I will say that a lot of times Texans Bill, if he gets picked up by another city, people will, like, people that don't realize he's joking.
It's awesome.
They get like completely like, oh, what a moron, everything. Texans Bill went after Boston. Oh, and I think it was during the collusion, which he called.
Oh, during the tampering, you mean?
Yeah, the tampering. Yeah. He called it tamponing. That's tamponing. Who tampooned who? That's what it was.
He kept calling Easter Bunny?
Who tampooned who?
He got this Easter Bunny going to.
I'll give Boston people credit. They got the joke. Like, Bill became a star up in Boston, and they all understood, like, okay, this is clearly a caricature. So I'll give credit, grudging credit to the city of Boston, who we find ourselves a little bit, like, oddly, we're kind of sister cities when it comes to some of the perhaps shame that or whatever we're going through, the mourning we're going through over our World Series championships, all that. Because of the cheating scandal. Kudos to Boston for getting Texansville. I appreciate that.
Yep, no doubt. Have you, I know you've heard this, Frank Clark's rant after the game with James Palmer, our good friend on the field. Mm-hmm. This is some pretty good stuff. This is some pretty good post-game trash talk. If you haven't seen it, James Palmer put up comments on his Twitter timeline of Frank Clark basically kind of just talking trash about Derrick Henry. And there were a lot of Titan fans that came after James saying, oh, Frank Clark, Derrick Henry's going to run over you, blah, blah, blah. And then what happens? The Kansas City Chiefs, they're in the Super Bowl now. Here is James Palmer with Frank Clark.
Past two games, each game, 70 yards, over 200 yards each game. I know damn well we wasn't going to win the game if we let that happen. They come in here, he ran for 70 yards. They call him the best rusher in the league. We're sending this home early.
I posted the comments that you said to me. And all over social media, everybody said you better watch your back, that you're saying things that you can't cash. Everybody on social media said,
they must not know who I am yet. They gonna find out sooner or later when I got that ring on my finger. At the end of the day, we champions. AFC, that trophy that got my own and last name on it, that's the KC. That's KC. Ain't no fall off. Last year, jump off sides, all that. I told him when I got here, this gonna change. Look at this. We the best in the world.
Go join.
I told him when I got here, I don't jump off sides like D Ford. We're going to the Super Bowl this time. It's basically what he was saying, right?
That part was awesome. Yeah. I don't jump off sides like D Ford.
Yeah,
you kind of do, but not in the same circumstances.
No.
Actually, early on in that game, the offsides were pretty egregious by the Kansas City Chiefs.
They were.
So the one thing, too, that people might not have been able to follow, kind of pretty impressive shout out to the founder of the franchise.
Yeah, that was good.
And saying that trophy's got our owner's name on it, Lamar Hunt, who coined the name the Super Bowl.
And the AFC trophy's named after him.
The old Dallas Texans that became the Kansas City Chiefs. Lamar Hunt started all that.
Does anybody on the Texans have that sort of rant in them if they were to win an important game like that?
A rant quite like that.
Yeah.
I'm not sure they do.
I don't even know that the Texans have a memorable post-game interview.
I wonder if that's always been a kind of a criticism going back through Capers, really, is that sometimes teams take on the personality of their coach.
Too businesslike.
And people would say that we were too milquetoast, I guess. So, which isn't... Yeah, that was...
you were rogue,
like that. But I think that with O'Brien, I guess you would have expected, if you're going to take on the personality of your head coach, I think we'd have a few more tantrums.
He shouted out a fan.
Yeah.
Told him, you suck too.
Yeah, we haven't really had any outbursts like that. Maybe that, if anything, we need guys to be a little bit more like a Bill O'Brien.
Like the most memorable post-game interview was probably this, I guess.
Live with J.J. Watt and the victorious Texans.
Thank you, Mike. J.J., you won the game and you still have a chip on your shoulder. What are you saying? Tell everyone what you were just saying.
Oh, I was just talking to my teammates about how everybody told us we couldn't do this. Everybody said, they're 8-0, you're 3-5, there's no way you're going to go into their building and win. Well, how y'all doing?
You told us before the game you wanted them in third down and long, and that's exactly what you did. What impact did that have?
Yeah, I mean, our goal was to come out here and make the Red Rifle look like a Red Ryder BB gun, and I think we did that
tonight. Wow.
I think he's a great player, there's a great team, but tonight our coaches put together a great game plan. We executed the game plan. Everybody did their job. It wasn't pretty. I mean, it's 10-6. It's not the prettiest game in the world, but that's a great football team over there, and we were able to do some big things on defense to help stop them to only two field goals.
Frank Clark, winner.
Look, that was when J.J. was still trying to feel his way through, like, finding his true self.
That felt
shoehorned in, like, because he had planned it.
He curses in press conferences now.
He doesn't. Now it's much more genuine.
Yeah.
He's become a much more genuine guy. Like, when he found his stardom early, I think he happened upon it after he wasn't a huge star in college or anything. Everything hit him too soon. It was almost like these movies where somebody becomes a rock star and they just go overboard a little bit. The phase where Axl Rose had the teased up hair.
Yeah.
That was one music video where he had the teased up hair and then he realized afterwards, okay, that's not me. I feel like JJ went through a phase for a few years where he had to realize, oh, you know what? That's not really me.
He needed a joke writer just as much as he needed a personal trainer.
Well,
Yeah. Do you think, in all seriousness, do you think he'd like to have the Red Ryder BB gun joke back?
Yeah, I think so.
Do you think he wishes that wasn't out there on the internet?
Yeah, I mean, we were
playing it in the show.
I don't think he's worried about it being out there on the internet, but it was like, okay, you could tell he prepared it.
Does he have enough money to scrub it from the internet? Could he go to the people at YouTube and say, hey, look,
there was a moment,
I'm a lot funnier now than I was back in 2015?
One of the Clinton-Trump debates, she had a line that she delivered, which would have been a good line. I can't remember what it was, but it was just so, she just couldn't deliver it. Because it was so obviously written beforehand and everything. I can't remember what it was, but like people on both sides cringe. You're sure. Like, what do you know? Right. Landry, what's up?
What up, fellas?
How you doing? You have a gigantic watch.
Yeah. You say that every time I wear it, man.
Have I said that before?
Yeah,
it's
yeah.
Like a Flavor Flav on your wrist.
Pretty much. Something like that.
I don't recall commenting on it, which makes me feel old because my birthday is tomorrow.
Wow.
I don't need to be forgetting things.
Happy birthday, man.
Thanks. Appreciate it.
How do you celebrate your birthdays now?
Tomorrow night, I'm going to the Rocket game.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
But other than that, Amy, just
sorry about your luck, man.
Nice cake.
What? We're there for when the pendulum swings back the other way. They're probably going to go. They're probably going to be 23 for 25 on threes.
I'm
predicting a 37-point victory tomorrow night.
Thank you, Seth. Yes. And then they're going to say, happy birthday, Sean. They're going to point out me, happy birthday, bro.
There we go. Like,
yeah, happy birthday.
Landry, real quick before we get into the toss, how do you feel about my plan to go to visiting ballparks for Astros games next year with a $2,000 pair of binoculars, a notepad, and a megaphone where I will just shout out random pitches every time. Be like, curveball! Knuckleball, just to troll opposing fans.
I'm okay with that.
Yeah,
I'm very, very much okay with that. I actually think the Astros. I think the interest is actually going to increase because of this thing. I think this thing is actually making it extremely interesting. And I'm actually more excited for the season than I was before these punishments were thrown down.
I'm with you.
I am too. I haven't looked it up yet, but I surmised this earlier in the show. I don't know that there's.
I love when you use words like surmise.
I don't know that there's a way to go look it up. But I would guess...
There's a way to look up everything, Sean.
I would guess that road tickets for the Astros, especially in places that feel extremely wronged by their transgressions, have gone up since the punishments were handed out.
I mean, I think baseball interest as a whole, what the hell were they talking about before this cheating stuff? Like, honestly, what was the storyline that this overtook?
The hot new advanced stat or something.
Yeah. I mean, this is good.
This is a pleasant surmise, Sean. Good job.
Thank you. Yeah, I appreciate it. What do you got going on?
It's Sean against the world. Last week was obviously a tough week in Houston sports. There's two hires that can begin the healing process for the city of Houston. Two hires that should have been made yesterday. One of them, which really can't be made just yet. I think you know where I'm going with that. So there's two hires. John McClain's going to come in. He's going to explain himself. He seemed really, really defeated by Chris Olsen being fired. Did you guys notice that? Like, normally when the Texans make a transaction, he doesn't seem as hurt. But I think John McClain has been, you know, I don't know if he fell off the diet, but there's a rumor that he's just been eating a lot of ice cream and crying in front of his TV since Chris Olsen got fired. So
I think he likes Chris.
We're going to try to help him out and get John McClain through that.
Is this a game of Guess the Source? That's one of my favorite games. I like playing Guess the Source, like with Ian Rappaport and Albert Breer especially.
Oh, that's easy. Yeah. Rappaport makes it pretty easy.
Yeah, I know.
Hey, B.O.B., you up?
Sometimes I feel like a certain somebody might call Rappaport and be like, hey, bro, like back off a little bit.
That's what I said the other day when Rappaport read his report. I was like, and Ian Rappaport read a text message from Bill O'Brien. I mean, Ian Rappaport reported on NFL Network.
Even O'Brien's like, hey, Rappaport, easy on defending the Clowney trade.
Rappaport will be like, Rappaport reporting facts, but then also be, and the GM committee, which has been a splendid success.
All right, so you're locked and loaded for 10-2.
We also need some help because we're going to be on the red carpet at the Houston Sports Awards.
Oh yeah,
and we're not going to ask any sports questions.
I like it.
So we need help on like what to ask each of these people.
Each of the nominees in the Houston Sports Award is tonight, starting at 6 p.m.
And it's going to be on TV. We're going to be all over this tonight. You and Lopez are going to be on the red carpet. Seth, you're going to be doing your roving reporter thing in the ceremony. And I'm doing the show with Clint this afternoon.
Oh, wow.
So we'll have all the interviews leading up to the...
Hardest working man in the business, Sean.
Getting a little absurd.
That tuition don't pay itself.
It's like I need my hose fresh.
I'll be good to go.
Morning.
You don't worry about me. I'll be good to go. Seth, I'll see you later today at the Houston Sports Awards. We'll see all of you at 6 a.m. tomorrow. Have a great day, everybody.
You could spend the weekend doing the same old whatever, or you could conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.